This message, titled The Trial of Faith, from Hebrews chapter 11, verses 8 through 22, was preached at Winchester Reformed Presbyterian Church in Winchester, Kansas. For more information, visit us at winchesterrp.com. Well, brothers and sisters, one of the best ways that children can honor their parents is by imitating the gifts and the graces and the virtues of their parents. And this is, practically speaking, this is why it is so important that parents, mothers and fathers, moms and dads, live lives that are worthy of being followed. To be men and women who can model and be an example for their children. And of course, I imagine this evening that if we think about maybe in our own self-assessment of our own strengths and our own graces, that many of us could attribute the strengths that we have to something that either our parents modeled and lived by example, or those things that our parents cultivated in our hearts. Whether it's a child who grows up to have a good work ethic because they witnessed dad all of their life having a good work ethic, or their mom serving tirelessly the needs of the family. Whether it's patience, whether it's gratitude, whether it's commitment, whether it's loyalty, whether it's love, many of us can likely trace our strengths to be, at least in part, reflective of the virtues and the graces of our parents. And I want to say this evening that what is true of that relationship, the relationship that a mom and a dad have with their children, what is true of that relationship, true of imitating those graces, is also true, brothers and sisters, of the spiritual relationships that exist in the church. Imitating the graces and gifts of those whom we might call spiritual mothers and spiritual fathers. Maybe you remember earlier in this letter, in the sixth chapter, the apostle actually commands us. He commands us to be imitators of those who by faith and patience have inherited the promises. And in many ways, that's the whole thrust, isn't it, of this 11th chapter, giving us one example after another, those in whose footsteps you and I are called to follow. And this evening, in the verses that we've read in particular, we find the example of Abraham. Abraham, whom you know from the scriptures, is titled the father of the faithful. Abraham is, in many ways, by God's own intention, Abraham is the preeminent example in all of Scripture of faith. God has intended the inspired record of Abraham's life to be used by us and for us as a surpassing and excellent example of what the power and the might and the efficacy of faith should look like even in our lives. Now, I imagine this evening that the history of Abraham is known at least in part, if not in whole, by many of us here. And if you're familiar with the life of Abraham, if you're familiar with the inspired record of his history, you probably know that his life is a mixture between what we might call the extraordinary and the ordinary. In Abraham's life, there are extraordinary things that happen. Extraordinary because the way in which God chose to interact with him, the way in which God chose to use him, is not, in one sense, necessarily a pattern and a paradigm for my life and for yours. God related to Abraham in extraordinary ways, things that we ought not to expect or even look for in our own lives, because God singularly worked in the life of Abraham. There are extraordinary things about the life of this man. But there are also, brothers and sisters, to those who know the history of Abraham, there are also things that are ordinary. Because what Abraham actually demonstrates for you and I is ordinary faith in extraordinary circumstances. And that is something that is worth us stepping back to pause and to think about. The faith of Abraham, brothers and sisters, is not different in kind from the faith that the Holy Spirit gifts to us through the gospel of Jesus Christ. The faith that is exemplified in the life of Abraham is not different in kind from the faith that is to be exhibited in my life and in your life. And you know that because that's the point of the author of Hebrews. He tells us, he describes for us this thing we call faith. Faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. In verse 2, by this faith, the people of old received their commendation. And the point of the apostle is the ordinary faith of Abraham, even in the midst of extraordinary circumstances, is intended to be an example to you and I as we seek to be those who don't shrink back and are destroyed, but as we seek to be those who have faith and preserve our souls. And what the apostle emphasizes here concerning Abraham is really faith in the context of trial. It is faith in the context of trial. And so as we come to consider this example this evening, our two points will be the trials of faith and faith in trials. The trials of faith and faith in trials. So as we collect our thoughts on what the apostle writes here, I want you to see first the trials of faith. The trials of faith. Now, I don't want to spend long reminding you, but we saw last week how it is that the apostle held forth the first three great examples of faith. He held forth the example of Abel, of Enoch, and of Noah. And the life of Abel demonstrates for us faith in relationship to worship. And we saw in the life of Enoch, in just a few words, how faith relates to the way in which we walk in this life. And we saw last week, as the apostle writes, we saw the faith of Noah as it relates in particular to the warnings of God. But even as the apostle has written about faith in worship, in our walking, and in God's warnings, he has not exhausted, brothers and sisters, he has not, by a long shot, exhausted the power of faith. And to that end, he brings in the example of Abraham. And the particular emphasis, as I've said, that he uses here, by the example of Abraham, the particular emphasis is on what we might call, and what he himself calls in the 17th verse, the testing or the trials of faith that were given to this patriarch. Now I wonder this evening if you remember, I hope you remember, the way in which James begins his letter. Maybe you remember this evening in James chapter 1, immediately after giving his greeting to those to whom he is writing, James, in chapter 1, verse 2, tells us what? That we are to consider it all joy when we face various trials. And if you remember that the language there that James uses, that language of various trials, is a word that literally means multicolored. A vast diversity of trials in our lives. And James goes on in the opening section of that letter to tell us that we are to consider these various trials to be to us a source of joy because, he says, as you remember, because these things test our faith. God intends various trials of all shades and all hues and all colors in our lives. God intends trials to test our faith, to put our faith, to put my faith, to put your faith to the test. And you remember that James tells us that God has a divine purpose in that. And the divine purpose of God in testing our faith is that in us would be cultivated steadfastness, so that steadfastness can have its full work in our lives. And the language that James uses is so that we would lack nothing. That you and I in Jesus Christ would be made complete. And so we face, our faith faces trials of various kinds. In some sense, friends, we might wish that our faith was never tested. We might wish that our faith was never tried in the furnace of God's refining fire. But we must remember that God is wise. God is good. And so difficult and painful as those trials and those testings can be, behind it is the wisdom and the goodness of God. And here the author of Hebrews wants us to know as Christians, tried and tested as our faith might be, that as our faith is tested, we are, in a very real sense, simply following in the footsteps of Father Abraham. Because Abraham, beyond measure, and perhaps without exaggeration, Abraham may very well be the individual in this history of humanity that has undergone more trials of faith than any other saint who is heaven bound. And the author here, in the span of Abraham's history, tells us in particular of four trials of faith. Four trials. The first trial of faith is there in the 8th verse. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. Now, if you remember the inspired history, you may remember the way in which Moses introduces the life of Abraham to us. Because the author of Hebrews is giving us, really, in one sense, a simple paraphrase of what Moses himself wrote in Genesis chapter 12, verse 1. In Genesis 12, 1, without much pomp and circumstance, we are introduced to Abraham. And we are introduced in these words. Now the Lord said to Abram, go from your country, your kindred, your father's house, to the land that I will show you. God comes and he interrupts, you might say, He invades, he interrupts Abram's life, and he says, Abram, go. Leave your country, leave your home, leave everything that is familiar to you, leave everything that is safe, leave everything that is secure, go. And perhaps that history, brothers and sisters, perhaps to those of us who have been familiar with these histories and these stories of the great patriarchs, perhaps they become so familiar to you and I that it begins to escape our attention how absolutely significant this was. What a pivotal moment in Abram's life. And I remember as a child hearing stories of my great-grandparents. My great-grandfather who, when he was a little boy, boarded a ship with his parents, leaving Sweden to come to the United States. And I'm told, according to the family histories, that my great-grandfather's family left Sweden, and they knew exactly where it is that they wanted to go. They wanted to move to Rochester, Minnesota. They knew. They went out. They knew their destination. And as a child, you hear those stories, and of course, you don't fully appreciate what that meant, that even though they were going to a land that was known, what a pivotal paradigm shift that must have been in their lives. To leave the land of their ancestors, to leave the land of family, to leave the land of kindred, even though they knew where they were going. And infinitely more so, is the call of Abraham. Because as you know, as I know, God doesn't tell Abram where he is to go. He says, go. Leave your father, leave your kindred, leave your land, go. Go. And Abraham had absolutely no clue where he was going. This is the emphasis of the apostle here. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. And when we enter into, if I can use the expression, the psychology of Abraham, what a tremendous trial of faith it must have been to be extraordinarily called by God. But that's not the only trial of faith that Abraham endured in his life. That was the first, but then there's a second, and the author of Hebrews draws our attention to it. Here in the ninth verse, you again see the way in which verse 9 begins, the same way that verse 8 does, with those words, by faith. And in verse 9 we read, by faith he went to live in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. So here's a new trial. Here's a new scene in the history of Abraham. Not only was Abraham called out of his father's country, but in time, and you remember that the sequence in which this happens, in time, in Genesis chapter 12, verse 7, Abram comes to the land of Canaan. And what's the big problem with the land of Canaan? The big problem with the land of Canaan, as we read in Genesis 12, is that it is filled with Canaanites. It's an inhabited land. It is a land that has already been settled. It is a land that already has people possessing it. It is a land that already has people living in it. And yet, in Genesis chapter 12, as Abram steps foot into Canaan, God says, to your offspring, I will give this land. This land inhabited by the Canaanites. And then in Genesis chapter 12, and I want you to hear this detail, because it's the detail that the apostle emphasizes here. Abraham, as he receives that word from God, to your offspring I will give this land, immediately we read, what did Abraham do? He pitched a tent. And why is that significant? Well, it's significant, if I can put it this way, brothers and sisters, because in that moment in which Abraham steps foot into this land, God does not give him a property deed to the land. God does not give him blueprints to build a home, to build a stable structure in which he and his family will dwell. Abraham merely pitches a tent. And as I said, that detail is extrapolated by the apostle here in verse 9. By faith, he went to live in the land of promise. But then immediately the apostle qualifies it in this way, as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him in the same promise. Abraham is a foreigner in the land that has been promised to him. Abraham is, as the old translations like to say, Abraham was a sojourner in a land that by divine warrant belonged to him. But he only sojourned in tents. And by the time that Abraham's earthly life expires, how much of that land did he come to possess? Well, if you know the story of Abraham, you know the answer. The only plot, the only parcel of land that Abraham owned in that promised land was the land that was sufficient enough to bury his wife. The cave of Machpelah, near Hebron, as we read in Genesis. And so, again, the author is telling us, here is a trial, here is a testing of Abraham's faith. By divine warrant, he'd been given, by the promise of God, he'd been given land, and yet in the totality of his life, he did not come to possess that land. Then the author introduces us to the third trial of Abraham's faith. And it's written of in terms of his wife Sarah. But there in verse 11, By faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive, even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one man and him as good as dead were born descendants as many as the stars of the heaven and as many as the innumerable grains of sand on the seashore. What is the third trial of faith? The third trial of faith is the barrenness of Sarah. It's the barrenness of Sarah. And if we're going to appreciate what a trial of faith that was, we need to appreciate the details in which that infertility and that barrenness manifested itself. What do I mean by that? Well, brothers and sisters, I hope you're sensitive enough and know this evening that infertility, in and of itself, is a tremendous trial. It is a tremendous burden that some wives and husbands. It is a stewardship of suffering that some in this life are called to shoulder. And of itself, it is a trial of faith. You think of Rachel. When Rachel herself was barren, and the way in which she speaks to Jacob, "Give me children or I die." You think of the tear-filled prayers of Hannah, pleading with the Lord to open her womb and give her a child. Infertility of itself is a trial enough. But here, brothers and sisters, in the life of Abraham and in the life of Sarah is something that in a very real sense is even more burdensome. It is more of a stewardship than what is sometimes commonly known. And why do I say that? I say that for this reason. Because Sarah's barrenness stands out in the backdrop of the extraordinary, singular, unique promise of God. In Genesis chapter 12, again, as Abraham steps foot into the land of promise, God says to him, "It is to your offspring that I will give this land." And at that point in time, Abraham has no offspring. And then in Genesis chapter 15, you know, sometimes we're apt, aren't we, to read the sequential chapters of the Bible, and we fail to really appreciate how much time passes. There are some 25 years that pass between Genesis 12 and Genesis 15. And in Genesis 15, verse 2, maybe you remember the way that Abraham contends with God, and he says to God, "God, I continue childless. You told me 25 years ago that my offspring would inherit the land, and here we are 2.5 decades later and I don't have offspring." And Abraham is wrestling with that, and he's challenged with that, and he wonders, God, where is the promise? And then, of course, he comes to think, well, maybe it's my nephew that will inherit the land. But God says in Genesis 15, no, it will be your own offspring. And then 5 to 10 more years pass. And at long last, in Genesis 17, God comes to Abraham and to Sarah in Genesis 17, 15. And he says, "I will give you a son." And you remember how Abraham responds. He laughs. And he laughs because he's 100 years old. And of course, the patriarchs of old lived longer than we see presently. In our day and age, Abraham lived to be 175 years old. But even at 100 years old, Abraham was not, can I say it, he was not a spring chicken. In fact, the author of Hebrews emphasizes that very fact. He emphasizes it in the 12th verse, "From one man and him as good as dead." As good as dead. And so, the barrenness of Sarah and Abraham going decade after decade without the realization is a trial of faith. And then, of course, we come to the final trial of faith in Abram's life, and it's there for us in verse 17. "By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promises, was in the act of offering up his only son, of whom it was said, through Isaac shall your offspring be named. And again, the familiarity probably makes us not appreciate the testing of faith. Abraham, who had waited for decades for Isaac. Abraham, who uniquely and extraordinarily, by the power of God who opens the womb, is given Isaac. Abraham, who likely for a number of years, a decade and a half, if not more, had raised his son and loved his son and walked beside his son, is commanded by God to sacrifice him, to raise a knife, to plunge it in his only son, the son in whom God had promised that his offspring would be named. You see, the point of the author is simply this: again and again and again and again, Abraham's life through the decades, Abraham's faith through the decades, was tried. And it was tested by God in the most extraordinary ways. And while our faith, while your faith is not tried in those extraordinary ways, it is an inevitable fact of the Christian life that we will face various trials. Trials of many kinds. And God apportions to each of his children what he will. God tries and tests each of his children according to his own wisdom and his own purpose. It's the trials of faith. But then secondly, this evening, having rehearsed some of that history, the second thing that the author brings to our attention is not simply the trials of faith, but in the life of Abraham, he demonstrates then, secondly for us, faith in the trials. Faith in the trials. Now, again, I want you to remember the important way in which faith is described in this first verse. Faith is the assurance of things hoped for. Or as we've seen in the past, perhaps more literally, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. That's a description of faith. And Abraham serves as this primary example because Abraham is one in whom this faith was present. Abraham is one who had the assurance of things hoped for. Abraham is one who had a conviction of things not seen. To maybe simply put it this way this evening, Abraham knew, Abraham was persuaded that behind all the trials of faith in his life was the unseen God. And Abraham was convinced that behind every trial of faith were the yet to be realized promises of God. You see the way, perhaps, in which the apostle begins to weave that emphasis in for us. In verse 10, he was looking forward to the city that has foundations whose designer and builder is God. In verse 11, By faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive, even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful who had promised. In verse 16, but as it is, they desire a better country that is a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God. And in verse 19, he, that is Abraham, he considered that God was able even to raise him from the dead, from which, figuratively speaking, he did receive him back. Abraham is one, brothers and sisters, in who this faith described in the first verse, this faith that is described as the assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things not seen, Abraham is one who knew that standing behind every trial of faith was the unseen God and the yet to be realized promises that the one who is immutably faithful had made to him. And you see, this then is where, brothers and sisters, this is where that even though Abraham experienced extraordinary testings, extraordinary trials, he met the extraordinary with ordinary faith. The ordinary faith that you and I are called in Jesus Christ to live by. Remember, this is the whole point of the apostle in the great application of all that he has written. We find it in the previous words of chapter 10. In verse 38, my righteous one shall live by faith. He shall live by faith. And the extraordinary trials of Abraham's life is met by the faith that is ordinary to every child of God. And how does that faith, how did that faith show itself in the midst of those trials? How does that faith evidence itself in the midst of trials? Well, the author gives us four indications. That faith shows itself in obedience. In verse 8, by faith, Abraham obeyed. He obeyed. When he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. And he didn't need to know. He didn't need to know because he lived in the assurance of things hoped for, and he lived by the conviction of things that were not seen. God said, and it was enough for Abraham. God said. God said, so I will go. And if I can just put it this way this evening, brothers and sisters, in the trials of faith with which we meet in this life, a true faith, the kind of faith that the author of Hebrews is writing about, is a faith that will always and only show itself in obedience to God. In obedience to his revealed will and the things that he has commanded to us. Disobedience is never, never the fruit of faith. In the midst of trials, in the midst of testing, faith shows itself in obedience. Abraham's faith in the midst of these trials showed itself in patience. In patience, again in verse 9, by faith he went to live in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. In verse 10, what is it that made Abraham able to live as a foreigner, as a sojourner, as an exile in this world? Because in verse 10, he was looking forward to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God. And Abraham knew there is an inheritance. There is a promise that is worth waiting for. He waited on the Lord. Patience, brothers and sisters, in the midst of the trial of faith, patience is one of the most challenging things, but how often we are called to wait on the Lord. Because as Isaiah says, those who wait on the Lord, they will do what? They will renew their strength. They will renew their strength. And this faith in the midst of trial shows itself in patience. This faith demonstrates itself, it evidences itself in a yielding surrender to God. Again, in verse 17, by faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises was in the act of offering up his only son, of whom it was said, through Isaac shall your offspring be named. Abraham yielded in submission to God. God telling him, offer up your son. And here's the thing, and we really need to grasp this. We really need to grasp this. Abraham did not raise the knife to sacrifice his son Isaac, being persuaded that before that knife could be plunged into his son, the angel of the Lord would stay his hand. Abraham yielded in submission to God, not because he was persuaded God would stay his hand. But in verse 19, he considered that God was able even to raise him from the dead. He did it because Abraham knew, I serve the God of resurrection. I serve the God who in the first moment of history called into existence things that are not. And it is not too much for his hand to give life to one who is dead. And so Abraham yields in submission to God, as faith always does. In all of our trials. And then faith is seen. It's seen, can I use the word this evening? It is seen in the legacy that is born within the family of Abraham. You notice the way in which the apostle moves quickly, very quickly, through the family of Abraham, through his descendants. We see it in verses 11 and 12. By faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive, even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one man, and him as good as dead, were born descendants, as many as the stars of the heaven, and as many as the innumerable grains of sand by the seashore. And then the apostle speaks to us, doesn't he? He writes to us of Isaac. Of the son of Abraham, in whom his offspring would be named. And then in verse 20, he continues with the lineage of this great man of faith. That by faith, Isaac invoked future blessings on Jacob and Esau. And by faith, Jacob, when dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph, bowing in worship over the head of his staff. By faith, Joseph, at the end of his life, made mention of the exodus of the Israelites and gave directions concerning his bones. What the thrust, if I can say this, as I understand it, the thrust of the apostle here is to get us to think of the legacy of Abraham on down through the generations. This man of faith, living by faith in every trial. And he reaps a harvest of blessing from God. To see his son Isaac and his grandson Jacob and his great-grandson Joseph and his great-great-grandchildren blessed in the family of Abraham. Not as though the faith of Abraham earned or merited, But for this reason, brothers and sisters, promises have been made to those who live by faith. Promises have been made to those who live by faith. And the legacy of Abraham's faith is carried one generation after another to you and I today. As the Apostle Paul says in Romans 4, we are those who share in what we share in the faith of Abraham. And so the Apostle wants us to know. Here's another angle of this faith, of this assurance of things hoped for, of this thing that is a conviction of things not seen. And what a mighty thing faith is, showing itself in obedience, in patience, in yielding submission to God in every trial. By faith. Brothers and sisters, we are not of those who shrink back and are destroyed, but of those who have faith and preserve their souls. Let's pray.